Sign up today for the Film Comment Letter. It's a free weekly digital newsletter featuring original film criticism and writing by Film Comment's editors and brilliant contributors.
The letter delivers exclusive features, reviews, interviews, streaming picks, news, and more directly to subscribers' inboxes before they're published on filmcomment.com the following Monday.
Sign up today at filmcomment.com. Hello, everyone. I'm Devika Girish. I'm the editor of Film Comment magazine, along with my co-editor, Clinton Crute. And we are so thrilled to welcome you all to this extremely special Film Comment live event, a tribute to the cinematographer Navroz Kontractor. Today's event is really special, and its inception goes back almost 4 years. 2020, the pandemic year, me and my co-editor Clint, we had these parallel, really epiphanic experiences. So that was the year when I discovered the work of Deepa Dhanraj, who is a radical Indian feminist documentarian. I discovered these shorts that she had made in the 1980s as part of a feminist film collective called the Yuganthar Film Collective, because they had been recently restored by the Arsenal Institute in Berlin. And because of the pandemic, they had done some free online screenings of those shorts. And I found them, and they kind of changed my world entirely. They opened me up to a history of grassroots labor and feminist organizing in India that I honestly had not known anything about. And at the same time, that year was the 50th anniversary of the New Directors New Films Festival that Film at Lincoln Center holds. And there was a special 50th anniversary edition which showed highlights from 50 years of that program. And one of the highlights was Duvidha by Money Call, a film from 1973. And that was also screened virtually. We never got to screen it in person. And Clint saw it then for the first time. And his brain was kind of broken. I remember he called me just to kind of, you know, and we just talked about how amazing that film was. So we both had these really eye-opening cinematic experiences. And then we realized that all of these films were shot by the same person, the same cinematographer, Navroz Kontractor. He was part of the Yuganthar Film Collective. He was Deepa's partner in life and work. And Duvidha was his first ever feature film as a cinematographer, a visual masterpiece. So Clint and I started thinking about, you know, honoring the cinematographer who had made these incredible contributions to Indian cinema, but seemed to be really underknown. Unfortunately, by the time we actually got to do the program, Navroz passed away last year in a motorcycle accident. And I really wish we could have brought him out here to New York, but I'm glad that we still get to celebrate him, even if in memoriam, with all of you, and with Deepa Dhanraj, who is here in person today, and who, along with Navroz, really laid the foundation for what we consider political documentary in India today. Deepa, when was the last time you saw this movie on the big screen?
I don't know, maybe 30 years ago.
Wow.
Possibly, yeah.
And what was it like watching it right now?
Very emotional, I think, yeah. Yeah, I kept thinking about, you know what I said earlier about the very zero budget, limited resources, and even while watching it now, you know, because Navroz has told me so many stories about what it was like to film this, to just share with you some of the film buffs, camera buffs, people who are here. This film was shot on a Bolex camera, Palette Bolex, with 100-foot reels. And if the Bolex was motorized, you got a shot that lasted 2 minutes 40 seconds. And if it was not motorized, hand cranked, and they had to do both things, it was 45 seconds. So you can imagine trying to plan a film with that kind of limitation to begin with. They shot it on Kodachrome with a very, very, the ASA was, it was very, very hard. Very difficult to shoot. It was such a slow speed. It was reverse stock, which meant you had to print it to get a positive. And that positive had to be blown up on 35mm with an optical printer, frame by frame. So they were terrified of scratches, what would happen. Are you interested in this kind of technical detail? So, you know, Manikol, for those of you who may not know, Manikol is one of our iconic film directors in India who, at the time when he was working, created, I don't know what you'd call it, new cinema. It was a very, very aesthetically different from Hindi film. And Manikol was very influenced by miniature painting, the art of miniature painting. And his visual references were based on that, you know. So it wasn't, in a sense, he was sort of rejecting the Western perspective notion of image making. So the idea, and in this, as you see, the Indian miniature painting, well, basically the background is white, you know. They start with the base color white, and then the colors are then painted on. And in this village, they were really, it was amazing what they did in this village, because they persuaded everybody to paint everything white, the whole village white. And they obliged, you know.
Which was apparently because this is the village from where the writer of the short story that the film is adapted from, Vijaydan Deta, is from this village, right? So we read that he convinced the villagers to just comply with all these requests.
Yeah, so, and the other thing was, you know, there was the question of light. So it's mostly shot in natural light because they didn't have lights. And if everybody in the village put off their lights, they would maybe get 2,000 watts of power. That's it. So you can imagine, I'm just sharing all the challenges. Okay. Now with a Bolex, you can't do sync sound. So that was another issue. So to come up with the idea of these monologues, these dramatic monologues, which you recorded later. Okay. So in every, I was just astonished, you know, just looking at it again, thinking that they didn't come up with haphazard creative solutions. These are really sophisticated kind of solutions, you know. The other thing was that he, when the film was done, I think Manikol realized that he had extra narration and he didn't have the footage. So this thing of freeze shots that you see, which were done, the freeze shots were again done on an optical printer. To create footage by extension, so that it could, yes, so that it freeze frames, so that it could accommodate. All these decisions, you know, even the way of using music or the other
the repetitions,
yeah. And I have to tell you another thing, that the only two movements that they had was like, you know, pan and tilt. So for the pan shots, because as I said, the raw stock only permitted you a certain length. So they would freeze, you know, do the shot and then freeze the tripod, okay? And actors had to do the second take exactly so that you could cut it, the extension, seamlessly, so you wouldn't notice the cut. I mean, so these were all sort of legendary stories, you know, that I had heard, because I only met Navroz, I think about, what was it, like almost 8 years after Duvidha was made. And for all of us, Duvidha was a very, very, radical film. Not just because of the way it was filmed. I mean, now we're talking about the cinematography and the visual quality of it, which was extraordinary, of course. But also Vijaydan Deta, I'll tell you something about this writer. He, he was considered a kind of a feminist writer, you know. And if you see this story, I mean, the whole idea of a woman, the fact that she accepts the ghost, even knowing who he is, in a sense, staking a claim to desire, It was very radical at the time, right? So even her monologues, if you see, like her interior voice, you know, when she talks about what happens to women and what you're expected to do, the role, etc. So Vijayadandeta was also another remarkable contributor. And finally, what I'll say is that this film, you know, the group of people who got together to fund and to do the art direction, the clothes, everything, and the context, it was a very unique group of people. They were artists, two very well-known artists, Nalini Malani, Akbar Padamsi.
And you mean visual artists, right? Painters.
Visual artists also, who thought a lot about how to, you know, how to construct the visual language of the film. So maybe I'll stop there, yeah.
Well, you know, people say, you know, when a film looks really beautiful, they say every frame looks like a painting. And to some extent, that's true. And, you know, the miniature painting references you make sense. But to me, every shot looks like a photo, you know, like a photograph. I mean, every single shot is framed not like a shot, but like a still image. And I was wondering if you could talk about, you know, Navroz's transition from still photography to cinematography and maybe how that influenced his approach.
I think very much you're right that it does have that feeling. But if you see, you know, also in the shot, when the camera moves, okay, how do they still retain that quality of those perfect frames, you know, that are in motion? So yes, I think definitely that influenced it. And you see, the other thing is that Mani calls regular cinematographer, who's K.K. Mahajan, again, a very, very well-known cinematographer in India. So he, when Mani asked him to do the film, he said, I can't work with a Bolex, right? I mean, that's amateur stuff. I'm not going to do that. I'm a professional. So in a sense, I mean, Mani approaching Navroz, because he had used Navroz's still photographs of Punjab in his first film, which was called Uski Roti. So it was like a challenge, you know. I mean, where would you get a cinematographer that's ready to... There was no money, I mean, not, you know, to make the film and then to figure out how to do it creatively. So I think it was a challenge, you know, and... they worked on this aesthetic together, you know. And I suspect it's also because Akbar Padamsi, the artist who funded the film, he said, you know, it's like, he said it's a one-to-one shooting ratio. He said, I'll give you, and literally it was like that. He said, I'll give you three cameras and, three Bolexes, and two of them didn't work. And I'll give you, you know, 60,000 rupees worth of stock, you know, film stock. And what was it? And an editing setup. So, you know, that was it. There was nothing more. So even, I think also the still idea came from how do you optimize stock, you know? So I think the many reasons why this happened. But he was the correct person for the job because... He had that understanding of it, yeah. Basically, he studied painting and still photography in Baroda in the MS University at the time. And then he went to the Film Institute because he wanted to be a cinematographer. But we had, the Film Institute had a very crazy admission rule that if you hadn't done science in your undergrad degree, you couldn't be a cinematographer. So they put him into the direction department, you know. So I think he got fed up. I mean, I think after a year, he said, I'm done, and left. He didn't want to be in the direction department because that's not what he wanted to do. But that whole year and a half that he was there, he just hung out with the film, I mean, with the cinematography guys. And especially in the institute, we had, because it was an old film studio, Prabhat Studios, and there were proper shooting stages with the old school lights and a Mitchell camera. Can you imagine a real Mitchell camera? So I think he spent most of his time with the people who repair those cameras and man the lights and He always says that he learned everything from them. Wow. You know? So, yeah, I think he did want to be a cinematographer. Yes, he did. Yeah.
So skipping forward to when you met Navroz, can you talk about how your collaboration began? So you encounter him 8 years after he's made Duvidha, which won prizes at international festivals, mm-hmm. just was this ushered in a new era, in a sense, of Indian cinema. And then you met him and you formed with him the Yugantar Feminist Film Collective with three other folks. And, you know, made the films that I was talking about in my introduction, which are really activist films, you know, films that were made for the movement. So how did Navroz end up working with you and making those movies, which, by the way, are all streaming on Criterion Channel, the four Yugantar Film Collective films and four of Deepa's other movies are streaming on Criterion if you haven't seen them.
Yeah, so I think, you know, by then we were together. I mean, you know, and so, you know, Navroz had a saying. He said that, you know, I shoot fiction like documentary, and I shoot documentary like fiction. And this was his, this is one of the things that he used to talk about, right? Now, when we started working in the Yugantar Feminist Film Collective, we were shooting, basically we were shooting like an observational verite style, you know, and sort of dramatic reconstructions. And he was really very good at both, you know. And I think when we started the collective, there were four of us, and he was the most experienced, you know, person, you know, film-wise. Like, you know, all of us were really, you know, very amateurish. We didn't know enough about filmmaking, but we wanted to make these activist films. So he was really, I think he was my... my teacher, really, in terms of film, like, you know, from the basic things of composition or movement or even shooting so that you had continuity, that you could edit, you know, get enough shots, all of that. So I think for me, that's how it started. But we developed a really very good relationship in terms of how to communicate in very difficult circumstances while we were shooting, you know, including a riot or other places where we couldn't even speak to each other, but we would have long talks about what we wanted it to look like visually. Also, he was, you know, it was not easy, right, to be partners and work together. I mean, so there were always, you know, lots of arguments in one sense, because Navroz would never shoot anything that he didn't think would work. Mm. And I often used to say, it doesn't matter, you know, I just need that shot. And he'd say, no, you'd never use it. So what? Why, you know, there's no point, right? So there was all this.
Like, he had a real aesthetic impulse, yeah, more so absolutely. Than you, who were of more course. Came up as an activist.
Yeah, totally. All my films, actually, it's his eyes. I mean, he's in that sense, he's a real co-author of all the work we did together. Really.
Yeah. I was going to say that those films are just so beautiful too. I mean, just like this film that we saw, I think that the Yugantar films, just for all their political content, are also kind of rapturously beautiful in the same way that Duvidha is. So I guess the question that I have is, how did you guys meet? We can kind of skip this. Yes. I kind of want to get an idea. I just want the
Spill
facts.
Spill the beans.
We met on a film shoot. So he was the DP and I was assisting the director, and that's how we met. It was a documentary film shoot. Yeah.
So you did have film experience. I think you're kind of downplaying.
No.
Your...
I was an assistant director to art house film people in Karnataka, and you have no idea, because the budgets were so minimal that the assistant director, it didn't mean much. What it meant was, you were basically a gopher, and you did. You had to do props, you had to do costume, you had to write continuity. So, you know, multiple things. It's just not, but that doesn't mean you got a film education. You know,
you didn't know how to. You still relied on him to in the editing room as well.
No, not in the editing room so much, but yes, in the editing room, in the sense that there would be a lot of footage that he didn't want included because he had very clear ideas about what were the good takes and stuff like that. But you know, one had to learn. I mean, I worked with good editors, and we had to.
How did the collective work on these films conceptually? They're really pretty conceptually very sophisticated. They're not simply documentaries, in that they're often recreations. They're often engaging the communities that the films are about in really kind of innovative ways. Were these ideas that one person would bring to the table? Were they kind of, did you sit around in a circle and kind of come up with ideas that kind of meshed with an aesthetic idea that you were shooting for? Maybe you could.
Yeah, I think initially the conceptual part was really working with the community, working with the women, whether it was trade unions, whether it was other movements. And once you came to, once that research was done and that kind of consensus was gained from, as to what the film, what kind of story the film was going to tell, then we had, the next step was really sitting down with Navroz and thinking, okay, how are we going to do this? Like, you know, how are we going to really execute what was agreed upon? So I think that was the kind of process. Yeah.
There's a scene in one of your documentaries, Something Like a War, made in 1992. Fantastic film about a population control and how it's kind of used as this anti-poor weapon in India, funded by Western bodies. There's a moment where, you know, you're with this group of rural and urban women activists and social workers, and one of them points to the camera and says, "I want an old husband like Deepa's." And I was wondering if you could talk about, you know, what was sort of Navroz's place like in these expressly feminist contexts where you're getting women to open up about their intimate lives. I mean, Maidservants, the Yuganthar film, has a scene where women are just talking about how awful their husbands are, you know, just how awful men can be. So what was it like for Navroz to be in these contexts? And I'm just curious.
Now, I have to say that I think Navroz was one of the people, very few people I've met, who was completely comfortable in any situation. I mean, really authentically comfortable. It wasn't, you know, and he could, you know, he when he was in these kind of spaces, he was very comfortable and he could put women at ease. You know, they were also very comfortable with him. There was a lot, he was a very funny guy, okay? I mean, really, a lot of jokes, you know, back and forth, and even to the extent of a little bit of flirting, you know, all kinds of things, right?
This seems like a good point to just, say he appears in the film, the next film.
Yeah, he's in the film, he appears in and out a lot, yeah.
Clowning a little bit.
Yeah. He's really a big ham. So I think that you know, that really made it possible, okay? And he would spend time, you know, even when the camera wasn't on, he wouldn't leave. He would spend time, he'd be there.
Don't encourage flirting on set.
No, it was just, what I mean is the, you know, he had many ways to, and he enjoyed being there, he enjoyed the conversations. And I often say this, that if when I see how he shoots women, particularly in all my films and documentaries, he's a very affectionate camera, you know, very tender, the way he frames. And would you agree? You've seen these?
Absolutely. Seen I it? Mean, yeah. You often speak about love being so central to your films, like you fall in love with the women you film, and you don't see them as subjects, they're really objects of love for you. Mm. And I think his camera work captures that love.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
Speaking of love, the next film is called Love in the Time of Malaria. And maybe we can talk a little bit about that as well.
Right. Also 1992, right?
Yes, that's true. Yeah. Something Like a War and Love in the Time of Malaria kind of made it around the same time. That's right. And that's the film we're showing next. And, you know, I saw that film for the first time last year at the Mumbai Film Festival. I'd never even heard of it before, genuinely. And I saw it at, you know, it was also a tribute to Navroz. And I truly found it unclassifiable. It's just so strange and so prescient, like you were saying earlier. And it's a very strange film. It's very political. It's absurd. It's funny. But just like Duvidha and like your other films, it's so pretty.
Yeah, it's just, it's also just, yeah, exactly. It's incredibly beautiful. And it's also Sanjeev Shah's only film, only fiction film. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about the making of it? As far as, you know, like, how did Navroz become part of this project? And what was his input like?
I think, well, firstly, that film is so unique, as you say. I don't think there's been another film made like it ever, because it's a satirical musical. It's such a, what do you call it, collage of references to popular culture, to a lot in terms of music, you know, citing Hindi films, you know, slogans. It's a... an extremely political film. And I think that, well, Sanjeev and Navroz were friends, I mean, very close. And I think Sanjeev always wanted Navroz to shoot it. It was, and also because in the film has a hybrid format, because it's part documentary style shooting, right, and part of it is like fictional narrative kind of shooting.
And the documentary parts is, to my understanding, real-life footage, yeah, of street protests,
exactly,
in the early 90s.
Yeah, not only protests, but just even the city, you know, life in the city. So I think Sanjeev really wanted somebody who could do both and, you know, do it very well. The thing is, even that film, like Duvidha, was, in a sense, the people around it, like the group that was gathered together around the making of the film, it was very collegial, you know. I mean, the music director, Sanjeev, the performers, and the musicians, because it's a musical, okay. And it's interesting that in that film, Navroz would also sit in on the music, like the compositions and stuff, and he would also play that round drum, the ghatam, the earthen pot. So he's contributed music to the film as well. But I think like that film, you know, how they came up with the visual look of the film, you know, is something that they both spent a lot of time thinking about, and especially Sanjeev did. And it reflects this collage method, you know, because the film is such a collection of various references, right? Yeah.
There's this artificial kind of TV aesthetic or something, and
yeah,
like slapstick comedy,
yeah,
and then suddenly you have like street protests or just like street photography. Yeah, it's really incredible. And we encourage everybody to stick around to check it out.
Srikanth Srinivasan, who wrote the essay that we have copies of outside, described it as if Louis Althusser had directed a Bollywood farce, which I think really nails it. Yeah. Should we?
Yeah, let's open it up to questions.
Something I was hoping you could explain more about, if you can, is the various garments in Duvidha, the clothing, especially the headdress, headdresses, because we see them sort of change throughout the film, and the camera itself sort of lingers on
those
textures a lot. So I was just curious if any of you could speak to that.
Well, those are the clothes that, I mean, are worn by those communities. The headdress, all of that. The veil is actually in the film. They play with the veil a lot, you know, because it's that's a really a signifier, you know, of first of all of modesty, of control for women, you know, and so when she takes it off or when she puts it back on, like at the end of the film, where, you know, you get the feeling that now she's surrendered in a way. She's so the veil is used again when she pulls it down, right? So Yeah, so I think the director played a lot with that as far as her character is concerned. For the men, it's costume. That's kind of the folk costume. The other thing I want to say about the story is that, though I've said that, it's their clothes and stuff, but this is a folk tale, okay? This is a folk tale that's given a very modernist twist. It's not the authentic folk tale. It's got a very modernist spin on it, you know? Like the sort of women's voice, that spin. So even maybe the look of the film is also, I wouldn't use the word totally authentic. It's as constructed as they wanted to make it, you know? But the interesting thing is actually the use of color. You know, the colors that are used for her clothes and, you know, the yellow, the red particularly, these colors. So the red as for the bride when she comes, you know, those are the bridal colors that she wears. And later when you have the black, you know, veil, which she's looking through, by that time she's like a married woman, you know, so there's a shift in that. And then finally at the end when she pulls down the yellow veil, that's also, I mean, that I wouldn't say anything about the color, but the act of doing it is really one of surrender, right? Yeah.
Hi, I'm just curious about the casting.
Ravi Menon, the husband, I think he was somebody Mani really wanted. He's an actor. But the role of the bride, Raisa Vakil, this is the only film she's ever acted in. And she was very young. She was, I think, 16 or 17. And she was the daughter of Akbar Padamsi, who was the de facto producer of the film. So a little bit, it was like a family film, you know.
They call them Nepo babies nowadays.
Yeah, no, but it was like a family film. Because her father, you know, her father-in-law is actually the author's uncle or something, you know. So I think a lot of the cast was taken from the village, like, you know, except these two, the main actor and Raisa. And she never acted again. She became an art historian. That's what happened. That's where she ended up, yeah.
I have to ask a question. I knew Deepa a very long time ago. I knew her as a phenomenal stage actress.
Oh, God.
You know, always knew you'd go into something creative. But, you know, I'm fascinated by what drew you to activism and to the kind of films that you made, you know, that Yuganthar has been making. So I'd just like to hear a little bit about that journey.
Yeah, so full disclosure. So Shri, who asked the question, we were in college together. And it's really amazing because we haven't seen each other for 40 years. And she just turned up for this screening. So I'm so happy to see her in America, in New York. It's like unbelievable.
Like a ghost from the past.
Yeah. No, I think what drew me to filmmaking really was my politics, I think. Because I had got into the women's movement and at that point I wasn't thinking of, you know, becoming a filmmaker like the way you think. But the first initiative, like to do the Yuganthar work, was really how do you make films about women's movements, women's political organizing, and how do you then circulate those films to other women with the hope that some questions may be raised or that they could consider, you know, we could start a conversation around it. That's how I think I got into it and then moved on from there, yeah.
Was there any particular event or movement that inspired you to move in that direction?
Yeah, that made you think cinema was a good tool politically?
I think it was, you know, there was a very important meeting which happened in Bombay, and it was the first time there were women. It was a national meeting and there were women from all over the country, you know, women academics, activists, also women who were in movements in etc. And we attended that meeting, and I remember listening, for example, to some women who had come from Pune, who were part of the domestic workers union there, and listening to their story of how they actually managed to get organized and create this union. And I think it was so inspiring, you know, just the story. And I think that was a very big moment where we thought, you know, this is fantastic. It's happening. It's right here. And could we, you know, make a film about it? That's how it started, I think, yeah.
Kind of piggybacking on that, I remember you once told me a story of attending, I think it was the first International Feminist Video and Film Festival in the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. When was that?
Yeah, that was around the same time, 1980-81, something like that.
Can you tell, say a little about that and who else was there?
That's gossip.
Yes. We love gossip on this podcast.
No. No, you know, you have to imagine a time. You know, we're in India, and it's so hard to watch films. You know, it's so hard to watch films from anywhere else. How were we to understand, for example, what was feminist cinema elsewhere and what were women doing, what kind of work was being done? And so I think the Amsterdam meeting was really interesting because we got to see work there, you know, from everywhere, from Europe, from the US. I remember seeing Rosie the Riveter, for example. If you remember Rosie the Riveter, there was, and Barbara Hammer, her work, which was an eye-opener. So it was an opportunity to
Safi Fai was there.
Safi Fai was there. Atiyata Labnoudi from Egypt. It was, you know, and Sara Gomez, her work from Cuba. So it was fantastic. I mean, it was really fantastic to look at this work and see what women were doing. You know, the kind of perspective they had. Not just political in terms of content, but even aesthetically, what they were trying to do. And it was fascinating, but in a sense, we had to do it our way. You know what I mean? You can watch it and be look at it, but it was, I wouldn't say it had a direct influence on how we thought of our work, because, you know, we had very different ways of working. But it definitely was a complete eye-opener in terms of what was happening elsewhere, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's fun to see how the ghosts were depicted in the movie as of opposed to, like, ghosts in other Asian folk tales, for example, yokai in Japanese films and also spiritual things in, like, other parts of Asia. Do you think there's any special twist or depiction of ghosts in this movie? Especially, like, I think in the beginning there are a lot of, like, high angle shots as mentioned in the essay as well. I think that's very interesting of, like, ghosts live in a tree and can be drowned in water.
Well, the only thing I would say is that normally in Indian folklore, ghosts live in trees. And they live in, actually not in banyan trees, which is different, but they live in tamarind trees. There's certain trees where ghosts live. But as far as the depiction goes, I think it's just how the director wanted it. I don't think it has to do with anything culturally or regionally specific, you know? I don't think so. And other thing, I mean, in this film, like, the ghost is also treated very realistically, right? There's no CGI, there's no, you know, he's there, right? Like, in human form.
It's almost more of a film about doubles.
It's about doubles. Actually, you're really right, because I was looking at the subtitles, and one of the subtitles should have been the double. Mm. You know, you're absolutely right, because in Hindi, it is the double. Mm. It wasn't subtitled correctly. Yeah.
What's the title?
Direction? It's Dilemma.
Dilemma, right. Okay.
Yeah. Is that right?
Yeah, Dilemma, Dilemma, two paths,
two paths,
many meanings.
I've seen it translated as, yeah.
Yeah, That's it, yeah.
And it's, I guess it refers to that point where she says, what is better, the truth or the lie, right? This mm-hmm. is kind of the dilemma and the choice between these, so the false husband and the real husband.
So there are many dilemmas in it. Or should she, shouldn't she also is the dilemma, right?
Well, in the next film, I think there's two paths too, right? The turtle and the mosquito. My favorite line is invoke the tortoise. They're constantly invoking the tortoise. But you'll get to that, hopefully, if you stick around.
Yeah, in the next film.
I wonder if maybe there's it's a big question, I know, but what was his work like? What were his interests? I know some of them, but from the 90s until his passing.
So I think Navroz was many things. He was a very avid jazz lover. And actually, he would photograph jazz musicians whenever he could. He was really absolutely aficionado. I mean, in India, to be somebody like that is quite rare.
He traveled to shoot jazz musicians.
Yeah, he traveled to shoot jazz musicians. And
of those photos are in the Smithsonian.
Right. And also, he was... he was a motorcyclist, a great, he loved bikes. He was also a car and bike journalist. He wrote for these magazines. He was a mentor to students, film students. He was very generous with his time, especially for young people. And he took workshops at film schools, design schools, etc. And also towards the end, he was working a lot in terms of setting up a national kind of photography exhibition that could be held in Ahmedabad, because he was working with an art gallery there for many years. This gallery is called Satya Art Gallery, and it is run by Navjeevan Trust, which is a Gandhian institution. So, encouraging young photographers, holding exhibitions, mentoring them, making sure the exhibitions traveled. Yeah.
What about his time in China? He wrote a book. He went to China and he wrote a book about it.
Yeah, he wrote a book about his experiences of filming in China. And he went to China just before Tiananmen. So it was a very different China. I mean, the film they made and the book he wrote.
What's the film called?
It's called Dreams of the Dragon's Children. It's a documentary that he did for a German producer. So many things.
Well, I was going to say maybe we should start winding down the Q&A, but I know, Deepa, that Sanjeev Shah, the director of Love in the Time of Malaria, gave you some words to read out. Yeah, so maybe we'll do that for the introduction. But do you want to say anything just about that film for people before we end, and Navroz's work on that film?
Yeah, Navroz's work on that film is like in two registers, as I said. There's a lot of like the documentary feel to a lot of the material. He's filmed it like that. And then there's the fiction part, which he's filmed in a different way. You know, it's more like, almost like you'd film a comic or a graphic novel kind of look to it. Because the film is very ironic. It's a satire, right?
So it's almost like pop art or something.
It's like pop art, exactly. Like very, very pop art look.
And for people who don't know the synopsis, it's about a constipated king who enlists a scientist to make a cure out of red onions to drive away mosquito-spreading dissent in the kingdom. So,
it's basically about...
It's based on a true story.
That's the documentary part.
But it's about, it's really about a very authoritarian regime, and which we all know, and what happens to people who do dissent. Yeah.
It seems very topical as well. I think it's very topical.
Very, very topical. So please stay. Please stay and please watch it. Okay.
Yep. So we have about 7 minutes before Love in the Time of Malaria. So feel free to take a break. And thank you. Thank you so much, Sudipa, for this conversation.
Thank you.
The Film Comment podcast features original music by Greg Ing. Film Comment is a publication of Film at Lincoln Center. Since 1962, Film Comment has been the home of independent film journalism, publishing in-depth interviews, critical analysis, and feature coverage of mainstream, art house, and avant-garde filmmaking from around the world. Visit us online at filmcomment.com.